Thursday, August 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden prepares to visit Turkey at a time of growing tension between the two countries. President Barack Obama arrives in flood-ravaged Louisiana.
The governor says he told the president, come next week, which is this week, and then we can show you around then when we're more in the recovery phase.
And black girls are determined to make their votes matter in November. It's all ahead. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden will be visiting Ankara, Turkey on Wednesday, and he intends to reaffirm the U.S. commitment to work together with Turkey against the scourge of terrorism. This follows the deadly weekend bombing in southern Turkey in Gaziantep, in which at least 54 people died. I'm joined now by VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sain. So, Cindy, this trip is coming at a time when the country is still really reeling in the aftermath of that terrible bombing.
Yes, that's right, Sarah. This is also a very sensitive time for U.S.-Turkish relations because, of course, Turkey suffered this very traumatic failed coup attempt on July 15th, and Biden is the highest-ranking Western leader to visit since then. And I'm hearing from some Turkish analysts here in Washington that a lot of people in Turkey are feeling that the West has not showed enough sympathy and has been too critical about the crackdown, which has been going on since the coup. But they think that the West should be a little more understanding. So I think Biden is going to have a difficult visit.
Yeah, and this comes certainly soon after that coup, and Fethullah Gulen, who is the Muslim cleric who is based here in the United States, the Turkish government, certainly the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has blamed that coup on Gulen, although Gulen denies that. So there is a lot of, I guess you could say, antipathy kind of, you know, from some of the Turks towards the U.S.
Yes, that's right, and has been very much played up in the Turkish media, and I'm hearing that most Turks firmly believe that the U.S. was either behind the coup or at least that U.S. intelligence services knew about it. Of course, something that the White House has very strongly denied, publicly denied, and is saying that, look, we have an extradition treaty with Turkey. We've had it for 30 years, and these things, you know, have to follow the rules and the guidelines of the treaty. And the decision on whether or not to extradite this 80-some-year-old cleric who is at a compound in Pennsylvania will be based on evidence. But I am also hearing that some U.S. Justice Department officials are heading to Turkey this week to look at the evidence that their counterparts there in Turkey have gathered.
Now, this meeting between Mr. Biden and Turkish officials occurs as the war continues in Syria and Turkey borders Syria. How much will the continuing violence in Syria be a part of these talks?
I think it will be a big part, Sarah, and the U.S. realizes very well that Turkey is a crucial NATO ally, a crucial ally in fighting the Islamic State terrorist group. Turkey being a victim, as you said, of this horrific attack on the wedding. And the White House, for example, is saying, you know, we please want Turkey to do more to secure the border with Syria, but realizing, not pushing too hard, because realizing what a difficult task this is for Turkey.
All right. Thanks very much. That's VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sain. It is time now to check out what's buzzing online. Our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, is here in Studio 22 to do just that. Hi, G.
Hi, Sarah.
Well, what do you have today?
Surprise, surprise. Not. People are talking about the two presidential nominees and Pokemon Go. So between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, who do you want to start with?
Let's go with Trump.
Okay, let's do that. Except this time it's about Mrs. Trump, not Mr. GOP nominee Donald Trump's wife is taking legal action against UK-based Daily Mail and other media outlets for escort allegations. Yikes. Her lawyer said notices were issued to the publications for making false and defamatory statements about her reportedly being an escort back in the 1990s. So that's before she married Trump. And as for the online reaction, top comments argued such scenario is probable because they believe she also got married to Trump for the perception of him being wealthy.
Well, I see. Well, now what about Clinton?
There has been allegations of her not being physically fit enough to be president, but on Monday she appeared on a popular talk show and denied those allegations. In fact, she called them a wacky strategy by Donald Trump, and in response to questions about her health, she opened a jar of pickles during the interview. Now, Sarah, could you do the honor and explain to us what that means?
You've got to be kind of strong, I would say. A little bit, you know? Okay. It's not always easy for everyone to do that.
Okay. But when we say you're in a pickle, doesn't that mean you're in a complicated situation?
Yeah, in a jam. Perhaps? Right.
Right, right. Something like opening a can of jars, maybe. Now, going over to the Pokemon Go craze, it seems like people in Taiwan are just as obsessed with the game as they are here. A video posted on Facebook shows a huge crowd running through the streets of Taipei to catch a Snorlax, which is a type of Pokemon. I hope I didn't butcher that name. Some people are critical of how Pokemon Go can be too consuming for its users, but fans are saying, hey, no one criticizes people camping out by the hundreds days before the Super Bowl or Black Friday. But I think people do. That's all for me today.
Okay, thank you very much for the wrap-up, G. Tweet us your comments and questions at VOA_IE. You can also find me and G on Twitter. I'm at VOA Williams and G is at G Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories trending. European countries are alarmed about fighting in Ukraine. Chinese, Japanese, and South Korean leaders meet in Tokyo. Somalia says 15 people are killed in clashes with al-Shabaab. And new U.S. home sales surge. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A New Zealand-based study suggests that children who are exposed to microbial organisms at an early age through thumb sucking or nail biting are less likely to develop allergies. The study goes on to say that it finds children that engage in both of these habits are less likely to develop allergies to common triggers such as house dust mites, grass, cats, dogs, horses, or airborne fungi. Researchers made their findings from data gathered by the Dunedin Multidisciplinary Study. The long-term study followed into adulthood about 1,000 participants who were born in Dunedin, New Zealand in 1972 and 1973. The researchers say that they are not suggesting that children be encouraged to engage in thumb sucking or nail biting, since it's still uncertain if there are any real health benefits from acquiring these habits. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a Muslim chaplain in the U.S. Army seeks to bridge gaps between cultures. President Barack Obama is visiting the southeastern state of Louisiana, a place which has been ravaged recently by a tremendous flood. And I'm joined now by VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas. Well, Mary Alice, Mr. Obama has received some criticism because he is only visiting the state, which has really been in a terrible crisis with the flood now. Why did he decide to visit this now and not earlier?
Well, that is a good question. And listen, this happened last week. The suffering there in Louisiana is just tremendous. You have more than a dozen dead. You have tens of thousands out of their homes. And so there's criticism as to why he continued his vacation on Martha's Vineyard and didn't stop to go and comfort people and ensure that everything is being done that could be done. Well, the White House says, and in fact the Louisiana governor acknowledges, that the president called and said, when is the best time for me to go? And the governor, Governor Edwards, told the president, We don't want to tie up any of our resources. They were actively engaged still in rescuing people and evacuating people, and a lot of the law enforcement and first responders were tied up with very, you know, life-saving and pressing things, trying to save property and residents. And so the governor says he told the president, come next week, which is this week, and then we can show you around then when we're more in the recovery phase and we're starting to have to try to get back to normal. But still, you did have the Republican presidential candidate show up last week, Donald Trump, and the governor has since then said, yes, we didn't want to turn it into a political thing, but I have to say that it did shine the light on the problems we have here in Louisiana, which is tremendous.
Yeah, and then also last week, Mr. Obama was on his vacation on Martha's Vineyard. And also there are those memories a number of years ago, back in 2005, when the city of New Orleans, also in Louisiana, was hit by Hurricane Katrina. And then President George W. Bush got a lot of criticism because he eventually did visit the city, but basically, you know, at the height of the, right after the hurricane, he basically flew over it, and he didn't visit at that time.
And the controversy then was, the way FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, reacted, which was, in the view of very many people, just inadequate. And the criticism was that, and also that the President Bush, then Bush, flew over instead of going on the ground and meeting with the people and seeing for himself. And so the White House contends this is not the situation that we've been, this White House has been very praised for immediate response. And I listened to the press secretary within the last hour, and he said, look, we've already approved or given out $120 million to the people on the ground for the recovery phase, and essentially just to get them in a place to live. And that's just to begin. And the focus on this area will have to be long-term. Long after the glare of the media is gone, the federal government will continue to ensure that Louisiana recovers. So there really is tremendous suffering there with people having no homes, and I can't imagine what it's going to be like to try to build it all back up.
Well, thanks very much. That's VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas.
All right, my pleasure.
Meanwhile, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump kicked up a media storm when he found himself in a feud with a family of a Muslim soldier who died fighting for his country. But hidden away from the spotlight, thousands of American Muslim soldiers, sailors, and airmen are quietly serving their country. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb caught up with one of those men.
Inside the Pentagon's 9/11 Memorial Chapel, built where Islamic extremists attacked the building nearly 15 years ago, sounds of the Muslim call to prayer. Daoud Akbar is one of five Muslim army chaplains. Since being stationed at the Pentagon, he leads afternoon prayer here, giving fellow Muslims a chance to connect with their creator.
Allahu Akbar.
It's about the community that he has built here. It's like providing us with the venue where we can come to say our daily prayers, which is a big thing.
Akbar is not your typical lieutenant colonel. For one, he was born and raised in the West African nation of Ghana.
My dad was trying to get me commissioned in the Ghanaian army as a chaplain. Then I won this U.S. Visa lottery. When you are growing up in Africa, not just Ghana, America is the land of prosperity. It's a place you go and do well.
But after months teaching some unruly high schoolers, he felt he needed more discipline and order.
So the military was very easy for me to just be part of it. And that felt home.
His army career has taken him to war zones in Afghanistan and Iraq. Oftentimes the only Muslim in his unit, Akbar says he works to bridge the gap between cultures.
And they see me in this uniform. They've never fathomed that there is a Muslim in America, especially in the U.S. Army. Then they see one. They are shocked, but then they are happy.
At home, Akbar teaches his children the values of Islam and the importance of character.
He tells us that We can get the good grades, but without the character, it means nothing.
With the political controversy surrounding a proposed ban on Muslims entering the U.S., Agbar teaches his family to remain kind to others. As an Army chaplain, he spent about two decades in service to America. But he doesn't judge those who have sought to vilify his faith.
Definitely, some of these things are based on ignorance, and I always see this as an opportunity to teach people. So I want to move on. I want to be able to define my story. I don't want my story to define me.
Thank you for coming.
Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. Black Girls Vote is a nonpartisan organization working to raise awareness among young African American women about the importance of political participation. While the main goal of the organization is to register as many eligible female voters as possible, the Black Girls Vote has a bigger objective that goes beyond elections. VOA's Faiza Almasri reports and Faith Lapidus narrates.
The presidential election is less than 3 months away, and while some Americans already know who they plan to vote for, others are still undecided, and then there are others who are just reluctant to participate. Nikedra Nike Robinson, founder of Black Girls Vote, sees that reluctance in many young African-American women, despite the growing power of the minority vote.
We know that in 2008 and 2012, that is black women that delivered the presidency. You know, 76% of African-American women were registered to vote, with 70% of them voting, according to the Center for American Progress.
So why would young African-American women between the ages of 19 and 25 stay home on election day?
Well, sometimes they don't understand the power of voting and what voting is and how it impacts their day-to-day life.
Black Girls Vote is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization.
We have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have Independents, we have folks who are the Green Party, but we advocate for things that we truly believe will improve our quality of life. We support who supports us, but also we need to understand the power of unity and coming together and demanding change.
During the primary elections, the group passed out umbrellas to encourage voters to go to the polls even if it was raining. They called daycare providers to arrange late-hour services so mothers could vote after work.
We were blessed with an opportunity and partnership with Lyft, which is the driving company. And so what we did here in the city of Baltimore, we lifted people to the polls for free, meaning that let's take away the excuses.
The grassroots organization meets women where they are, in stores, hair salons, restaurants, and college campuses. At Brightwood College in Baltimore, Maryland, group members are reaching out to young eligible female voters, explaining the registration process, and showing them the connection between their votes and their everyday life. As an example, Robinson points to how who they elect to the local council could affect the government response to a murder in their neighborhood.
Whether it's street police patrolling in that community, whether it's lights in that park across the street from me, or whether it's more economic opportunities for African-American men, that's tied to policy. Because every single day, politics happen, every single day, in every single aspect of our life.
Kiara Banks, who is studying at Brightwood College to become a certified medical assistant, has never voted before.
I came today to get registered to vote and become a member of Black Girls Vote because I think it's time for a change.
Her classmate, Keisha Addison, is working full-time and raising three kids. She's been voting since she was 19. And for the upcoming elections, she's weighing which candidate will best help her and her community.
My main thing is education, because I have children that are in school, and I'm still currently receiving the education. Also, we've been having a lot of problems with the police brutality with our young men. So I would like to hear what they, how they feel about that and what they're going to do about it.
Addison is considering joining Black Girls Vote because she believes that younger women, like her 21-year-old daughter, should be more politically involved. Her daughter says she doesn't want to vote.
She just wanted someone that actually had a voice for the youth and was concerned about the voice of the youth. So I was telling her that regardless of who you vote for, you need to vote. The vote counts no matter where you put it.
To get that message across to the community, group members plan neighborhood events, like a campaign for class president for children in Kids Zone, a summer program.
If I'm Madam President, I will make every day a sports day, where we play soccer, football, kickball, but most importantly, basketball. With my connections, I will have Stephen Curry himself bring private lessons to every kid, say its own kid. Every day will be a pizza and ice cream party.
Once you teach them early, and so when they go home, they're going to say, Ma, I voted for the president today. Not president of the United States, but president of the kids say so. So come November, when they hear about voting, Mom, you need to go vote too.
Group founder Nike Robinson says teaching younger generations about the democratic process is crucial to help them understand why their vote counts, how choosing candidates who represent their views can bring positive change to their communities. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Last year, Argentina elected a new president, Mauricio Macri, who quickly took a number of steps to help revitalize the country's limping economy. These include ending currency controls, which discouraged foreign investment, beginning to remove import restrictions, and reducing export taxes, particularly agricultural tariffs that hinder Argentinian farmers' ability to compete on the international market. Argentina has a terrific new leadership team. There is an economic reform agenda on the table that is aimed at boosting trade and investment, eliminating poverty, creating jobs, easing regulatory burdens, and reintegrating Argentina into the world economy, said Secretary of State John Kerry to the American Chamber of Commerce in Buenos Aires. Nonetheless, the economy is still sluggish and likely to contract before it picks up steam. But Argentina can help its economy grow by prioritizing four key elements. The first is education. Schools should be aware of and teach skills that the marketplace demands. Thus, private sector involvement in the education process is increasingly important. It is the reason the U.S. started the 100,000 Strong in the Americas Innovation Fund. Co-funded by the private sector, it allows students the opportunity to gain the experience and instruction they need through study abroad. Second, Argentina must invest in policies encouraging trade and integration into the global economy, already a part of the country's new economic plan. Facilitating this goal is a trade and investment framework agreement signed by the United States and Argentina in March, which deals with issues such as market access, intellectual property, and workers' rights. Third, facilitating the growth of the small business sector should be a top priority. That is why the U.S. and Argentina are cooperating to establish an Argentinian network of small business development centers. Finally, Argentina should invest in clean energy, not only because it is the right and efficient thing to do, but also this quickly growing business sector offers great economic opportunities. I believe the friendship between the United States and Argentina is going to grow and grow for generations to come, said Secretary of State Kerry. You're on the right track, and the future of this country and of this region could not be brighter.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.